Trevor Zamparelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Now it is sex and relationship therapy time.
Warning. The following item is not recommended for little ears.
Because it's time for a dose of sex therapy with Rachel Cook.
So that, as always, is the little ears warning. And if you can't catch the chat right now, you can catch it all later on the podcast. And this week, we are turning the slot over to listener questions. And as ever, we're joined by our resident sex therapist, Rachel Cook, who has all the answers. Rachel, how are you?
Oh, I'm good, thanks. And I so enjoy the Q&As. We get some fantastic questions in, some of which are bonkers, and I love it.
There are actually some brilliant ones today. So I'm really looking forward to just setting you loose on all of these. So we'll go straight to the first one, right? And I'll read it to you here. I really love my girlfriend, and I'm also so sick of the pattern between us that feels like cat and mouse. We never seem to be just content with each other. There's always one of us a bit backed off or pissed off, and one trying to win the approval before it switches over. What might this be, and what can we do about it?
Oh, this is amazingly common. I think most people will experience this dynamic at least a few times in their lives, you know, with dating. And some research says that the most common reason that couples fall out of love and even stop having sex is because of this, what's called pursuer-distancer dynamic that, you know, develops over time.
Okay.
You know, basically, you know, a romantic couple's ability to have a loving and fulfilling, you know, kind of, fulfilling relationship requires balancing two primary human needs, and that's togetherness and separateness. Now, generally, when things are really good between you, it can feel very easy to navigate the conflicting needs of spending time together and spending time apart. But when you can't find a good balance between connection and autonomy, you often wind up in this frustrating dynamic where one person is kind of the more anxious pursuer. So they're more clingy and they're, you know, kind of maybe more critical around that and asking for things. And the distancer or withdrawer is the person who is feeling like they're suffocated and not having enough space. Now, sometimes you'll find in relationships that one person generally takes on one of those roles and the other one takes the other. Mm. But it's also very possible, as this person has said, to switch over really regularly so that you never really have any time where you're just having a good time. So I would say, you know, a good first step is to establish more emotionally intelligent dialogue between you that allows both people to feel heard and validated. You know, basically getting to know more about your needs and what is driving the desire for more space and autonomy at times, what's driving the desire for more kind of togetherness, and knowing things like your love languages can be really helpful, because maybe one person is really wanting more verbal affirmation of the other person's love or care or desire or interest or whatever it is, and the other person might much prefer it could be, let's say, physical affection. And so when they're not getting physical affection, they become sort of maybe withdrawn and sort of, you know, kind of listless and low and not really engaged. So work out what's leading, you know, what is generally happening. That can be really helpful and give you a lot of information as to what's going on for yourselves and in the dynamic between you. And then you might also want to do that with a therapist. That is a very useful thing for someone to be able to reflect back to you what's going on.
That's brilliant. A lot of this is always it boils down to like talk to each other, doesn't it?
Yeah, really.
Every time. So another one here for you. I've moved in with my partner 3 months ago, and I'm sad to admit that I'm absolutely hating it. Not having my own space or anywhere to retreat to, having to sleep in the same bed every night, how he's letting himself go and eating, picking his toenails, farting in bed with me next to him. It's honestly been a nightmare, and I feel like I feel like I'm going to blow up and break up with him. What can I do? How can I stop being so critical and angry towards him, or should I just call it a day? That's tough.
Oh God, this person, you know, I think it's really, really common for people to become more themselves when they get more comfortable in a relationship, which can include particular habits that are frankly gross.
Yeah.
You know, most of us have some that, you know, some people don't find that irritating or disgusting because it just doesn't bother them, or maybe they do the same thing. And then there's going to be certain ones that we just really can't put up with. So to a degree, I would say some of this is inevitable. Mm-hmm. But again, you're going to have to talk to him about how it's affecting you. You know, it probably won't be a very comfortable conversation or set of conversations. And I would suggest, you know, sort of setting out that you will pause or stop the conversation if he's becoming very defensive. Really, you need to focus on, you know, the impact on you and how to move forward and be clear about your boundaries around this. And then another thing I would say is the relationship escalator is still very pervasive in our society, which is this idea that you have to go through a set of steps in order to be successful in life, which is from, you know, dating to, you know, having exclusivity in your relationship to then maybe moving in together, getting married, having kids. Not necessarily in that exact order, but that's roughly the escalator that we're told in our society is what's good for you. And it's okay to recognize that some of those steps just don't work for one or both of you. You know, that's information, not failure. It's a bit like how so many people are encouraged to progress to become managers at work. It simply doesn't suit lots of people to become managers. And it can be the same with any of these steps. Now, I would say with some of them, you know, you can afford to try them out, like living together, and it might just not work for you. It's a little bit more difficult if you have children together, because you can't really go back to that. But I would say to this person, absolutely sit down and you know, talk about what the things are that are really bothering you and whether it's possible to you know, have a period of kind of probation as such, where you see if that can get better to the degree for both of you that it feels, you know, satisfying. Or you might decide that it's not that you have to break up. You might just decide that living together doesn't work for you, and you can have a very fulfilling, happy relationship without living together.
That's gas, because you never hear that as an option. Do you know what I mean? Like, as in, we just don't work living together, but we work great living apart. You know,
it's
not something that ever comes up. It reminds me of that episode of Sex and the City where Harry is leaving his tea bags all over Charlotte's apartment. That's literally what it's like. I've another one for you here. Hello, Miss Cook. I hope you can help me. I think my partner has IBS. They do really smelly farts at inappropriate times, particularly before bed. It's quite embarrassing and it really kills the mood. When I bring it up with them, they get defensive and deny it's happening or even that it was them. I'm worried about their health, and although I love them, I can't help but feel disgusted and turned off sexually. How can I make him see a doctor?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, again, quite related to the previous question. I think you have to, you know, it sounds like this person is already bringing it up with them, and what they're doing is being defensive, denying it, you know, kind of dismissing the conversation, or, you know, kind of turning it off in another direction. Maybe they're making a joke out of it.
Yeah.
It sounds like this person is, you know, is avoiding dealing with this. Now, that could be because they're really worried that they actually have like a serious health condition.
Something's
and they're
wrong,
afraid of going to the doctor about that, which, you know, would be really upsetting if that's what's happening for this person and they feel really anxious. But it sounds like, you know, what the problem with the avoidance here is, it's not just a case of like, if this person was just like, OK, they do gross farts and, you know, that's fine. I can live with that. But if it's turning them off sexually and they feel disgusted, that's likely to continue and potentially, you know, kind of accelerate. Mm-hmm. And so I think you have to sit down and be very real about the impact on you, that you're saying, look, you know, I understand that you might have your reasons why you don't want to address this. However, it's really impacting me and our relationship. So I need you to commit to doing something about it. Also, because I'm worried about your health. And so, you know, although your partner is not responsible for your feelings, of course we impact each other in relationship. And so, you know, really just being quite clear about what you need from them, and you can give them space to talk about what it is that they're worried or anxious about, you know, and then make a plan together.
Brilliant. It's very rough, but it seems to be coming from a very good place. You know, it's concern, and it's, you know, concern for their relationship and stuff. So absolutely. I've another one here for you. This is weird. This would annoy me, I think. My partner keeps proposing to me in jokey ways or bringing up the conversation of marriage in subtle ways. I already know I definitely don't want to get married, and he's known that since the start of our relationship 3 years ago. I really love him, and I'm worried that he might become disheartened and find someone else to marry. What should I do?
Oh, okay. So there's loads of possible angles here.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe this person is literally just joking because he accepts that you don't want to get married, and he's trying to be affectionate in a misguided way. Maybe he's not realizing that it bothers you because either you're not showing that, or maybe he's not very good at picking up on those signals. You know, marriage is still largely held up as a goal and pillar of successful life in many societies, including ours. And we grew up on a diet of media and often religion, you know, which hugely encourages monogamous life partnership, marriage, cohabitation and children, which obviously is something that some people want to do. But, you know, there's more and more people who don't want all of those elements, and some of them don't want any of those elements. So, you know, another angle is that maybe marriage is actually really important to him and he doesn't realize. Or it's important to him and he's hoping to change your mind by exposing you repeatedly to the idea, which is dodge. Then there's the fact that maybe his family are directly pressuring him to get married, or his community, or maybe he just feels an underlying expectation from them. So, you know, the answer with this, again, like all of them, is talk to him. Set aside time to talk about his views on marriage and what he wants for his life. Tell him your fears and that him bringing it up makes you feel uncomfortable and anxious. If you find out that marriage is really important to him, that will be sad because it's not what you want for your life. But better to know now rather than, you know, maybe in another 2 years' time when you're potentially more invested and intertwined in your lives.
Yeah.
So chat about it.
Okay. Someone else says, my partner and I are in the process of opening up our relationship, but it's early days and I'm concerned that there's going to be a big imbalance in how many people we sleep with, because I barely fancy anyone and he fancies everyone. I'm worried I won't be able to manage the jealousy and envy that he's having such a good time and being intimate with tons of people while feeling drained after one drink with someone who I already know I don't fancy. Does Rachel think there's any hope for us?
Oh, I can relate to this one. So we've got jealousy and envy here. You know, jealousy and envy both involve a feeling of desire for what another person has. But jealousy involves, on top of that, a sense of rivalry, you know, either wanting to take something else has away from them or fearing that they want or will take it away from you. And they're very painful feelings for many people, but they're also completely normal feelings. They don't necessarily mean that anything is wrong. And certainly not, you know, in this case, that you're failing at non-monogamy just because you experience jealousy and envy. You know, it's one of the top things that people say to me, possibly the top thing that people say when they're questioned about whether they would ever consider non-monogamy. They say, oh no, I'd be too jealous. Now, that's not for me to say that someone should, you know, become non-monogamous for any particular reason, but that just because you're afraid of experiencing jealousy is not a reason not to do it, because it's just another feeling. You know, it's uncomfortable, but most of us can learn to be more okay about experiencing it, even if it's not that we make it completely go away. You know, and in this situation, you're never going to find two people with exactly the same desires, needs and experiences. And it's also human nature to compare. You know, people often say comparison is a thief of joy, which it certainly can be. But it's also unrealistic for most people that we won't compare ourselves at all. You know, so I think for this person, learning how to kind of comfort yourself, have a support network around you of at least some non-monogamous friends and maybe a non-monogamous friendly therapist, and then also engaging with resources. There's tons of resources out there, like the Jealousy Workbook by Kathy Labriola. Then we've got The Anxious Person's Guide to Non-Monogamy by Lola Phoenix. And we also have Polysecure by Jessica Fern, which is really good for understanding better about attachment styles and ways of communicating. So, you know, again, this is a really common situation and I feel for this person because it can be awful to feel as though the other person is just having so much more fun and finding non-monogamy so much easier. But with the right support, there's definitely hope for that to be, you know, much more enjoyable. And
good,
fulfilling.
Good. Because it's so hard. It's hard for a lot of people to even manage jealousy and envy when they're not in a non-monogamous relationship. You know, it's like it's one of the things you hear most about in people's relationships. So I can't it's magnified, I'd say, to a huge degree when you're in a non-monogamous relationship as well. Another one here. We'll go to the next one. I feel like I've been hurt too many times in dating and relationships, and now I'm really withdrawn and defensive whenever I meet somebody new, but I just don't have the hope or the energy to be excited anymore. I thought I really wanted a partner, but it just doesn't feel worth it. Do you think I should just give up on dating or plow on?
Oh, I'm so sorry this person is feeling so down and disillusioned. You know, it can be a really lonely, frightening, upsetting and shameful place where we go round in circles blaming ourselves or blaming the world and other people. You know, it sounds like this person has some more kind of grieving to do. You know, that this might be, it might be very useful for them to work with a therapist around, you know, what kind of rejection and breakups and endings kind of represent to them, which could have a lot to do with their early life, with their, you know, parents or caregivers, you know, and then, you know, this sort of sense that there's something wrong with you, that it keeps happening to you, you know, is also very common and can be just quite difficult to dig yourself out of that hole on your own. Mm. Because it can, you know, it can often be such that because of how you end up kind of withholding and protecting yourself, mm. that it doesn't make you come across as very available to other people who you might be dating, which can end up in this kind of self-fulfilling prophecy where you feel like you're being proved right again, yeah. and again, that nobody wants you and that relationships never work out for you, and that you see yourself as the common denominator. And so obviously at some point you're going to get completely just deflated by that.
Yeah.
So I would say, you know, take the time to work out, you know, if there's more sort of like grieving and acceptance you need to do, and also maybe I would say, you know, be sort of clearer with yourself about what sort of things you want in a relationship. For some people, they just haven't learned or aren't very good yet at being able to kind of read the signs of someone else's mm-hmm. availability or unavailability when they're starting to date. So potentially this person is unconsciously choosing people who are already very unavailable to them, which is not to blame them for the fact that they're having, you know, a tough time. It's more to recognize that, you know, we often play our own part in how these kind of dynamics kind of pan out.
And it can be a real grind, can't it? Like, you know, I suppose people, they want people to believe that, you know, dating's super fun, you know, and it's a fun time. And it can be, but it can also be a real grind. So it's not unusual to feel that way, I don't think.
It's definitely not unusual. I hear people of all genders, all ages,
yeah.
you know, people who are, you know, like people who want all sorts of different kinds of relationships, mm. absolutely jaded and just so, you know, kind of upset by the amount of ghosting and crap communication and lack of kind of clarity.
Yeah.
You know, which can feel also, it leads to people having massive trust issues and sort of, you know, kind of settling for subpar behavior from each other because of this. And, you know, obviously dating app culture is a part of that. I'm not saying it's the whole, you know, kind of it's completely to blame, but yeah. it's definitely an aspect of the anonymity of that and the kind of disposability of how quick it is and how much people are based off just a couple of photos or whatever. So, you know, learning how to get away from that as well and take breaks from it, you know, doing kind of digital detoxes, seeing and working out how you can meet people in ways that are offline can be really helpful as well.
Yeah.
But just basically, yeah, take time to rest and take a break from this when you need to.
Give yourself a holiday,
then,
yeah.
Exactly. And then be clearer about what you want so that you're going to recognize it more quickly.
So there's about 4,000 questions still, but we're not going to. I want to squeeze in a last one for you here. So this is really interesting. I'm a woman and I don't want kids for so many reasons. How much they cost, how worried I'd constantly be about them, how much I'd struggle without sleep, how much I think being socially and emotionally isolated would negatively impact me considering I don't have family or many friends living close by, how much I don't want to carry a child with all the discomfort and health risks associated with it. But my female partner is desperate to have a child and is happy to bear it. So where do we go from here?
These are very real concerns. Like I'm seeing more and more clients who don't want to have children because of, you know, could be the political and ecological environment. Lots of the reasons that this person has just shared about, you know, for their life, for themselves, you know. And I would say, you know, it's just really difficult because some of those fears, you know, like not wanting to carry the child because of the health risks associated with it, you know, that's alleviated by it being someone else bearing the child. But
sure.
also this person might feel huge amounts of anxiety about their partner potentially being, you know, impacted health wise by having a child.
Yeah.
You know, there's just, you know, even obviously lots of people have children, have been having children since time began. But they're, you know, it can often be played down in terms of the impact of that on your body, your health, your emotionally and physically, and just how much that can take out of you, the toll that it takes on your relationship and your work mm-hmm. and all sorts of things. So, you know, I think really having dedicated discussions with your partner with an agenda of topics around what life might look like for both of you with children and without. You know, yeah. If you were to have children, how would you divide tasks? What would you want in terms of kind of time off work, childcare?
Yeah.
How would you want to be as a parent? How would you manage money? If you didn't have children, how would you like to spend your time together? What needs would you want to have met by having or not having children, basically? And, you know, if you still can't agree on that, is it possible to negotiate a way for some of those needs to be met? Because often it's not really about specifically the having of the child itself. It's the experiences that we want to have, you know, kind of emotional and practical,
yeah,
by having a child, which is often related to the idea of having, you know, a close-knit family and the security of that and the kind of social aspect of that, which obviously for many people doesn't work out that way when they do have a family. I think it's very possible to talk about those needs and just get a lot more clarity, which, again, a bit like one of the earlier questions, It would be very sad to figure out that you're just not aligned enough to continue your relationship, but yeah, better to know now rather than waiting, you know, longer
even
and
deeper
longer.
Yeah,
exactly. Just kind of kicking that, the, you know, kicking the ball down the road, yeah, where, you know, it just might be even more painful in time when your lives are more intertwined and you're more invested in that person. So have the conversations now.
Rachel, you're such a legend. I could listen to you all day, to be honest. This is Rachel Cook, psychotherapist and mental health consultant. You can follow Rachel on Instagram at Rachel Jane Cook, and she's going to be back next week. So if you have a question or a topic that you want her to take on, get in touch with the team 24/7 on jen@rte.ie. Jen, Rachel, you're a legend. Thanks so much for chatting to me.
Talk to you soon.
Chat to you soon. Good luck.
Jennifer Zaffarelli.
Weekday morning from 9
on 2FM.